and thanks for listening to RTÉ Radio 1's The Rolling Wave podcast with me, Aoife Nic Cormick. In this episode, we'll be talking to musician Aoife Granville about the history of women flute players in Irish traditional music. And we'll be asking why, for so long, there weren't more of them. Major Morans and the Mystery Reel there from Catherine McAvoy from her album The Home Ruler. Aoife Granville, it wouldn't be crazy, I don't think, to assume that somebody like Catherine McAvoy comes at the end of a long line of female flute players. But oddly enough, that's not really the case. And we're going to talk about that and the reasons for it in a minute. But maybe for some context and in order to understand why you are interested in this work, maybe tell me a little about your own background in music.
Yeah, thanks, Aoife. I grew up in Dingle and I was lucky enough, I suppose any of us in the town, we're lucky to have a great tradition of fife and drum in the town and the Ran and the calendar customs. And when I was young, as luck would have it as well, I suppose I was around seven, the senior members of the fife and drum band decided to start a youth band and I begged my mum and dad to go. I was underage, you were supposed to be eight. And became a part of that youth band along with a lot of other youngsters in the town. And after a couple of years, myself and my friend Maureen Bennison graduated to the senior band. And it was only quite recently that we were told or realised, I suppose maybe in the last 10 years, that we were actually the first girls in that band in the fife and drum. Now, we were followed by a lot of drummers and other girls at that time, Tara Kennedy, Colleen Goheen and many others. So we had a little gang of us in the band. But we were never aware that it was any way different, which was interesting, I suppose. And when I graduated to the traditional flute in my teens, I was surrounded by a lot of women, and I would have seen Catherine McAvoy, Tara Diamond at Willie Clancy, would have been at Skull Aches with the likes of learning from June McCormack, Kay Webster, Siobhan, Ní Chonaron, and others. And also around my own age, there were plenty of girls playing. So I didn't really take much notice until I would say about 10 years ago that I started to wonder a little bit more and actually realise that it is a relatively new tradition for us. So I just wanted to find out a little bit more for my own knowledge, I suppose. I don't have an agenda with the work or anything like that, but just to know, and I suppose be in a position where I can pass on that information if I have a student or doing a workshop or whatever. But yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, and one of the earliest recordings you could find of a female flute player was of a woman called Teresa Gardner. And this is only 1959, so, you know, it's not that old. But tell me about her and about this track.
Well, I was very lucky that I had a conversation with Seamus Connolly, the wonderful fiddle player, just by chance. And I mentioned to him about the women flute players and he said, "I bet you never heard of Teresa Gardner." So when I came home, I was in the States, and when I came home, I went to the archive, and he had said how good a flute player she was and he knew her. She was a lady from Kilcreest in County Galway. And we don't know an awful lot about her, and I'd love to find pictures of her and different things, but she was recorded by Father Jack Cohen in 1959, and actually his archive was donated to Coates Cultural Air, and so I managed to get these tracks with thanks to Siobhan Conaron there. But she's a wonderful style of playing, and I was really taken by this track, as were anyone else that hears it, I think, with her poise and control and command of the instrument. I really love it.
And is it just the one track that's there?
There are a couple of other tracks, snippets, and she is recorded. I think Ciarán MacMahon recorded a programme where she's in an ensemble type playing. But that's really all. So there's not an awful lot. Only that Seamus mentioned her name to me, I wouldn't have come across her very easily, you know.
OK, well, let's have a listen to this. So this is Teresa Gardner.
There is Teresa Gardner from Kilcreest. Thank you.
Teresa Gardner there on flute, as chosen for us by Aoife Granville tonight. There are one or two tunes in our own radio archive here as well, and in those she plays with a fiddle player just called Mrs. Rowland. We don't have a first name, unfortunately, but maybe just for the sake of putting it out there, the name might jog someone's memory out there. So let's have a listen to that. This is Teresa Gardner and Mrs. Rowland. Gardner and Mrs. Rowland there from the RTÉ Radio Archives. And as I say, if those names or that track jogged anyone's memory, I'm sure I know myself and Aoife Granville would be delighted to hear from you. Aoife, there's another interesting figure you came across, a woman called Mary Kilcar. What do you know about her?
Well, it was actually through a good friend of mine, Tess Leminski, who's a wonderful writer and academic and great fiddle player herself. She's written a considerable amount about women and gender in Irish traditional music. And she had come across Mary Kilcar and I suppose put me in that way. And Mary Kilcar was born around 1890 or thereabouts. And it was Lucy Farr who spoke a lot about Mary Kilcar. So again, from Galway. But interestingly, I suppose, and something that Tess questions in her own writing is that, you know, Mary was a spinster, and whether this impacted on her not being documented as such properly in the tradition, which is something I suppose we have to question about a lot of women. And she didn't play outside the home, and I guess didn't have, you know, a father or a brother that played, which would have been a link into the social sort of music making for other women. But it was Lucy that knew of her and used to hear her play in her own house, you know, which is very interesting. And she didn't go outside the home playing, but was said to be a wonderful flute player. So I'd love to have a time machine, you know, and go back and see and hear them play. But it's very interesting, I suppose, and reflects, I suppose, how the likes of Mary Kilcar was seen at that time.
Yeah, there's an interesting piece, and you can read a lot of Tess Leminski's writings about this and about Mary Kilcar online. And there's a really interesting point made in an interview that Lucy Farr did with Reg Hall, I think, where, you know, Lucy was saying, you know, why don't you come to our house or to wherever for a session? And Mary Kilcar was saying, oh, no, that wouldn't be right. I couldn't do that. And, you know, that she didn't have the backup of, as you were saying, somewhere social to go. So she just never went out.
Yeah, and it's very sad, I suppose. Now, maybe we can say that. I can say that now. You know, I can't imagine not being able to go outside the house with the flute or whatever. But, you
well,
know,
you can
if you
now,
think of the
Aoife.
likes. Yeah, well, I can now. Yeah, it is true. But when you think of Julia Clifford, you know, alongside her brother Dennis and later her husband, and, you know, I suppose like people like Mrs. Crotty were unusual, but Mrs. Crotty had the pub as well, you know, so it was in a social setting, so it was quite different and a little later, I suppose, as well. But it is very interesting, you know, having to have that sort of in to be a part of the social music making. But it's interesting with the flute, I suppose, when you think of the 20th century, the early part of it, and you know, it was becoming such a popular instrument, and you were seeing women, you know, the Aggie Whites and people like that in ceilidh bands, but we don't see the flute players in the ceilidh bands. I suppose Teresa Gardner probably the first, and then Anne McAuliffe probably around our county. But it is interesting how it didn't take on, and there were obvious, I suppose there were some attitudes, and I have heard some older players when I've asked them saying that, well, it wasn't really the done thing for a woman to play the flute, you know, at that time. No reasons are given for that, but it's something that's echoed in, you know, that there's similar sort of attitudes and traditions all over the world to do with windblown and flute instruments. So,
because that was my next question, you know, why? Because, I mean, I know that, say, for example, talking to, you know, Louise Mulcahy about the pipes, and there was this notion that the pipes were, you know, too big, or, you know, that you had to be too very strong, or, you know, somehow they weren't physically suitable for a woman, which of course isn't true. But I mean, you couldn't even say that in terms of the flute. So, you know, it's hard to understand why it was so different to the fiddle, say, for example.
Well, I guess that, you know, when I've done a lot of thinking about this in the last few years, I suppose, and it is physical in a different way to other instruments, I suppose, the flute, in a way that people maybe don't think about. So, you know, you have to, I suppose, create the rhythm in many ways with your own breath, and lots of, and there's more to it than that. But, you know, there were, maybe people didn't feel it was ladylike, the ladies themselves. I'm not so sure. It's very hard to tie down. But there were, I suppose, notions, certainly in other traditions. I'm not sure if it's the case for the Irish tradition, but that it wasn't ladylike, and it was considered, I suppose, suggestive for a woman to play a flute in front of a man, especially. So that's something that may be the reason here, or contributing factor, but I'm not so sure, you know. But definitely in other traditions, and again, like even in Native American tradition, that it would be deemed sort of not suitable for a woman to play a flute in front of men, unless she was the daughter of a flute player or had that sort of lineage. So it's very interesting. It's something, of course, we don't think about now at all.
Okay, well, thankfully that attitude didn't prevail. And as the programme moves on, we're going to hear plenty of very, very great flute players. But the next musician that I want to play, or that you've chosen, is a woman listeners might know. Her contribution to the music of Sliabh Lochra has been huge, and she's been recognised widely for it. And she's Anne McAuliffe, and she was born Anne Sheehy. Tell me a little bit about Anne, because the flute wasn't her first instrument, I don't think.
No, Anne is a wonderful lady, and I'm lucky enough to know her well, and her husband Nicky, and they contribute a huge amount here in Kerry to the music scene, and have taught so many people. But she learnt, well, accordion, I suppose, and whistle initially, and her father taught her in Lixnaw first. But Anne played always a Radcliffe or a Bowen system flute, and was a member of a number of ceilidh bands, the Kingdom Ceilidh Band, the Brusna in particular, I suppose. And she also would have toured, like I would have seen her touring and performing with Na Ruidhe Rí, which was a group of amazing musicians, which included Seamus Connolly and Michelle O'Sullivan and others, when we were younger, and performs a lot with Sheen Satira. And she plays a lot of flute in the ensembles, but also toured a lot on the Coltas tours as a flute player, as well as playing accordion, and a wonderful lady. Very shy. I'm going to put pressure on her now to record a few more flute tracks for me in the next while. That's her warning. But a wonderful lady. On national radio, she'll have to do it now. But yeah, so Anne is a wonderful, wonderful musician and has contributed a huge amount.
Music there from Anne McAuliffe on flute with her husband Nicky McAuliffe on fiddle. Aoife Granville, the first female flute player to win the All-Ireland, the senior All-Ireland, was Deirdre Collis in 1975. And bear in mind that the Fláthiúil had been running since 1951, so that's a long time. And again, like Anne, she's Deirdre Collis, she's a multi-instrumentalist. Tell me a little bit about her and about this track we're going to hear.
Yeah, well, it was interesting looking through the records of the senior All-Irelands, you know, because when you think about the 60s, and I suppose it's quite different to now. And you know, it was such a showcase for traditional musicians from its beginnings through to the 1980s. It still is, but in a different way. And you would have had a lot of the same players through the 60s and 70s competing all the time. You know, we heard recently about Chris Troney and his 10 All-Irelands, you know, and it was quite a great platform. And when I went looking and found that Deirdre Collis was the first lady in 1975, I was very taken by that. And I know she comes from a musical family, plays accordion, a wonderful whistle player as well, and there's some gorgeous recordings of her whistle playing in the Coltis archive. And I spoke to Deirdre a few months back and I said to her, God, it was great, you were the first woman. And she said, I don't think I was. Oh, no, I doubt I was the first woman. So it wasn't something she was aware of, which I thought was funny as well. But she was very visible on the Coltis tours during the 70s in particular, and alongside Peg McGrath often. And there's some gorgeous recordings, as I said, in the Coltis archive of her. And she tells me that she doesn't play as much flute today as Box, but it'd lovely to hear more of her flute playing.
Deirdre Collis there playing Mama's Pet. Aoife Granville, you mentioned Peg McGrath there, and I think, you know, a lot of what I've read about her or seen about her or heard about Peg McGrath, she people talk about her as a kind of a pioneer, maybe in terms of the visibility of women playing the flute. Tell me a little bit about her. She was from Roscommon, but she lived most of her adult life in and around Dundalk.
Yeah, Peg was from County Roscommon and was taught by Josie McDermott, the wonderful Josie McDermott. And I guess that she was quite visible on the scene. And, you know, alongside Deirdre Collis, I mean, I've seen beautiful photos of them from Coltis tours in the early 70s and that. But I know that Catherine McAvoy, one of the and for a lot of other flute players, have mentioned that Peg McGrath was the first woman they saw playing flute. And, you know, I think she, and I had one lovely conversation with Conal O'Gra the one day about Peg, that he said that the reason he carries his flute case on his shoulder was because when he was young, he saw Peg carrying her flute case on her shoulder and he wanted to be like Peg, you know, which I thought was lovely. But her playing, I think, stands out. You know, it's just so rhythmic. Oh, so there's gorgeous, again, like poise, I suppose, and control and great attitude in her playing. You know, it's something that I suppose I would say to students often, you know, to listen to her, to listen to the Catherines, because of the attitude. And I mean that in a very positive way. You know, if you're too nice about playing the flute, I tell some people, you know, no one will listen to you. So to have that kind of attitude and rhythm and pulse in your playing is really important. And I think that's really obvious in Peg's. But she also, you know, was won the flute title the year after Deirdre, but also then recorded that wonderful album with Kathleen Smith and Mary Mulholland, Cherished Ladies, in 1981, which was really, really important and significant recording, you know, at that time. The three female musicians and a gorgeous recording. She was also a member of the Thaun Cayley Band, who would have been very active too, of course.
And she died very tragically in 1995. So she was very young when she died.
She was very young, yeah, very tragically. And, you know, it's like anyone that dies too young, you know, it's just awful. And a woman that I'd love to have met, but is still influencing and inspiring certainly flute players, and that's very obvious from talking to any of especially the women that came after her, you know. So
okay, well, you mentioned Cherish the Ladies, and we have that, and if I get a chance, I'll play it in before the end of the programme. But I found a nice track in the radio archives the other day, and it's Peg McGrath with Bridie Lafferty on piano, so we might have a listen to that now. McGrath there with Bridie Lafferty on piano from the RTE Radio Archives. Aoife Granville, one thing that strikes me when you look at this is that, you know, especially from the 50s, 60s, you know, those kinds of years, there are so few women to talk about. And I can't help wondering, does that mean that there weren't any others? Are we only hearing about the very best of them? And there were others who played, but maybe not to the same standard. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, because that's natural. You know, musicians come in all kinds of standards. But that mix or that full picture is especially missing with women, isn't it? If it ever existed.
Yeah, it is. And it's frustrating and it's annoying and everything like that, and there's probably a variety of reasons for it, like, and you know, it's something I found out with even looking at the RAN here in Dingle. You know, it was frustrating looking at that because I couldn't find a lot of information, or people didn't document it because it was such a normal thing to do. And sometimes I wonder, oh, was it just that, you know, was they in the 50s and 60s, you know, in society with the women, you know, and even the pub, if the session scene was starting to grow around that time, women weren't necessarily allowed in certain pubs, or were going to the snug. So maybe, you know, I mean, when the Fla Ceoil started, I suppose, I think, you know, to be fair to Coltis and that touring scene, we see a difference, because interestingly, I spoke to a woman that was on one of the first Coltis tours, which would have been in the 60s, I guess, lately, and not a flute player, but she said that, you know, she was delighted to get invited on this tour and to tour abroad with Coltis, and she had young kids at the time, and so many people said to her before she went on tour, during the tour, after performing and afterwards, you should be at home minding your children. And you know, and she took no notice of that and was strong enough to not take much notice. But I'm sure other women didn't have that attitude, and she was right, you know. But like, I suppose, you know, people would wonder about the impact of Coltis and things like that. But from looking at it now and looking back on that time, certainly through the 60s, and looking back at the photos of the tours, there were four or five women out of the 10 musicians on those tours often. And it certainly, they started to become more visible from my looking at it now, which was really positive. But it does make you wonder about the others that were perhaps at home, or maybe teaching their kids flute, or playing in the home. But we're lucky we didn't have that experience, I guess, you know, or I certainly didn't, you know.
Okay, well, we're going up north for your last choice, and a woman who's a second generation, possibly longer generations, but definitely a second generation flute player. Tell me about Tara Bingham, Tara Diamond, as some people might know her. Tell me a little bit about her.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of Tara's music, and of Tara herself, of course. She's a great, great person altogether. I'm lucky to know her quite well now. And I suppose one of the flute players that I was really struck by her style, alongside Catherine and Peg, you know, when I was younger, seeing her at Milltown Malbay and other places. And she was born in County Down, and her father was a flute player, Leslie. And she would have been influenced a lot by, again, the Cathal McConnells, Josie McDermott, and the style, I suppose, even though from County Down, influenced by the Sligo Leitrim Roscommon style. And interestingly, I remember hearing Tara on the Manon Hill series on TG Cahir talking about, you know, people used to be surprised when her dad would bring her along to a session or the flower or whatever, and to see a small girl playing the timber flute, you know, the big flute or the wooden flute. And I suppose there is that assumption sometimes that a petite person or a girl may not get the sound or may not get heard through on the flute. But yeah, she's a wonderful player and has some gorgeous recordings out there. And I really love Tara's style of playing.
Music from Tara Diamond there from the CD The Other World, Music and Song from the Irish Tradition. So Aoife, you were talking about how good those Coldest tours were and the involvement of women and how positive that was. And, you know, we said that Deirdre Collis was the first woman to win the Senior All-Ireland in 1975 and then Peg McGrath the year after. Do you think that made a huge difference? Because a massive number of women then started to come to prominence as flute players in the 1990s, and they would have been, you know, born or starting to play around that time, sort of around the 70s.
Yeah, I think it made a huge difference. And, you know, say for the likes of me growing up, women were very visible, as I was saying already. And I think it did. And I don't think many of these ladies considered themselves pioneers, but to me, certainly they are. And the more I delve into the story, they are. And it's very important. And I suppose visibility, it doesn't matter what line of work or what kind of line of the arts or performance you're in. If we're seeing men playing certain instruments or dancing or whatever, or women playing flute or women playing pipes or whatever, it's all very positive, because, you know, that does naturally have an impact on a generation that are watching or learning. So it was really important. And the 1990s in particular, I suppose, when you think about what was happening, and even I always use the woman's heart as well at 92 as a kind of a watershed sort of time as well, in my own head, for music. And the 90s was such an active time, but you had people like June McCormack, you know, Emer Mayock, Deirdre Havilland, Tina McSherry, you know, scattered all around the country, playing in bands and that sort of thing, and definitely more visible to the likes of me coming along, which is really, really important. And we're all grateful to them too, you know.
Well, happily, you know, it's nice to finish a conversation where we started and we only had one recording. There's no way we could list, you know, all of the women playing flute now. So things have changed an awful lot in the last 50 or 60 years, thankfully. Aoife Granville, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. If listeners out there have information on Mary Kilcar, Teresa Gardner, or indeed any other female flute players, I'm sure you'd love to hear from them. So you can get in touch, therollingwave@rte.ie. And I'll pass all that information on. So a hard job now, as opposed to just one track at the start. You have a hard job now, because to pick a track for us to finish, somebody from the sort of later generation of flute players, Aoife.
Yeah, and I guess that, you know, as I said, I was lucky enough that there was a lot of women on the scene when I was learning. And one lady I learned a lot from at Skulneig and different workshops was June McCormack from County Sligo, and a wonderful flute player and a great teacher. And, you know, I'm just a big fan of her music. And yeah, so this is June McCormack. Thank you.
thanks for listening to the Rolling Wave podcast. For rights reasons, the music here is shorter than in the original broadcast, so if you want to hear the full versions, just go to rte.ie/radio1. This programme was first broadcast on the 4th of October 2020. Till the next time, Gur Míle Maithí agus slán.